Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A Scottish football podcast that isn't obsessed with just two teams, niche nonsense, or surprisingly brilliant. You decide. The Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. The cult Scottish football podcast now adapted into a hit TV show. Search the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast on your chosen podcast player now.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I'm Boyd Hilton. It's sometime around 7 o'clock and it looks like Thomas Partey is winging his way in a plane over to London, having had a medical in Spain, and that we're going to sign him for the 45 million release clause, and it's all very exciting. No confirmation yet, and so if this doesn't happen, then apologies, but at the moment it's looking like it's going to happen. Obviously, it's a complete coincidence that it's happening now as we're doing this podcast, because we always do it on a Monday pretty much at 7 anyway, but it's beautifully timed, and I have got Sky Sports News going on in the background fully and monitoring the situation. Should that be finalised? Should he touch down and sign the contract, place it in his hand at any point by presumably Edu or someone? But we're still in that exciting situation where there's live transfer day, final day action, which is good. We've also got Josh Landy is here, psychic Josh, looking resplendent. And he's got some exciting Arsene Wenger-related news that I won't spoil at this point. We'll discuss that later and discuss Arsene Wenger's interviews he's done about his book coming up soon. And we have actor, singer, presenter, comedian, impressionist, and star of not only Celebrity Karaoke Club on ITV2, but also the long-awaited revival of Spitting Image on BritBox, Luke Kempner. Welcome, Luke.
Good to be back. Arsenal playing well, you know, it's all good. Yeah. Life's good.
It's beautiful. There was a launch on Friday in central London of the show, Spitting Image, with all the big TV critics and TV journalists.
Yes, yes.
Like me. Invited to go along. Tragically, I couldn't make it, and I have to apologise, because the lovely publicist emailed me the day before saying, are you coming to this bloody launch or not? Every Friday I record my other podcast, my pilot team podcast, so I couldn't make it. Of course, I thought when I said I could make it, she'd immediately go, oh, we'll reschedule the launch, we'll put it on a little bit later.
I mean, I said, if Boyd's not going to be there, then I'm not going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, what the fuck? But I know lots of people who did go who thought it was really good and had a really good time and said it was great. And I've watched the first episode, which is on Britain, and it is very good. Which ones did you do
my big ones in episode one was Dominic Waab. So I do lots of Dominic Waab, and I do a fun thing with Kawabti, where he does a vlog. I do him. I do a bit of Matt Hancock, who's going to have more this week. But his was quite funny.
I bet he is
hiding behind plants
after the 15,000 missing cases of COVID.
And then I did a lot of voices in the Jacinda Ardern song, playing some various New Zealand singers and characters. And I think that's about it for episode one. But then, like, I'm doing
Piers Morgan, so you'll hear a lot more of Piers as the time goes on. I got to chat to Piers on Good Morning Britain the other day, and he was very happy with his grotesque puppet. And I'm doing Jürgen Klopp as well. You know, I might be a little bit more of him this week. Yeah. And then, and actually Emmanuel Macron, you'll find that basically sounds a little bit like Arsene. So you'll find there's more Macron. There's basically a little bit of Arsene slipped in.
Nice. And the Arsene Wenger book is out soon, as I'm sure you know, which, and you're going to, I know you're going to the kind of launch chat about it.
Yes.
At the Palladium. So I think when the Arsene Wenger book launch starts, he's on Graham Norton on Friday week, which I revealed on Twitter, had a viral. He's on with Dawn French and Samuel L. Jackson.
Amazing.
Yeah, what a lineup. I assume Jackson's going to be on a video on Zoom.
Oh, right, okay.
I assume, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
it's possible he'll be in the studio, but they had a mix on Friday in the studio, and he'll definitely be on with Dawn French, which even that alone, I like. And what the fuck is Graham Norton going to ask him as well? I'm fascinated by that.
Oh, he's going to be exceptional. I can't wait.
Yeah. And we've already had a couple of interviews with him. There was an interview with him in The Times and one, I think, in L'Equipe or somewhere like that. And in The Times interview, the most interesting thing about the Times interview was, we'll get to the Arsenal games that happened yesterday. But I wanted to mention this before I forget. Did you read this? Did you read this, Luke?
No, I've not read it, no.
He talks about God, no less.
Wow.
He says, I still have religious...
Dennis Burkamp.
Yeah, him, God, and the other one. And the Judeo-Christian
entity, okay.
The all-seeing, all-powerful one. Second... No, I'm not going to say that. Yeah, I'll offend people. Oh, I don't care. Second is Dennis Burkamp.
Exactly. The complaints are rolling in.
Yeah. I still like to go to church. It's a place where you can concentrate. He goes to Mass. He watches Mass on television. I cannot say I'm a practicing Catholic. God has a huge strength. You cannot prove that he doesn't exist. On the other hand, you cannot prove he exists. I mean, it doesn't get much more existential, philosophical than that, does it? In the middle of a fucking launch of his autobiography about managing Arsenal.
I love that his book is going to be a complete Christian rant. That's what it's going to be. There's been nothing about Arsenal. But to be fair, like his statement, as always with Wenger, he makes a very good point.
Yes, he does. Josh.
Now, Boyd, I have to come in here because there was something else mentioned in these interviews, wasn't there, about his walking and running?
Yes.
That he does in his local area.
Yeah.
And I was out... on the weekend in the local nature reserve, very close to my house. And I was with my wife, who is now 5 months pregnant, and we were walking up what I'd say is fairly... Thank you, Luke. We were, on what is fairly uphill terrain, I would say. And there's no one near us. We haven't seen anyone for minutes. And a long way behind us, we can see someone at almost the bottom of, not quite a hill, but not far off. And it's been wet and it's hard underneath. And this guy looks a bit old. And he gets nearer and nearer. And it was Wenger. And I have never been so excited. Have him. And because he was moving quite slowly, but if I'm moving like that at 70, I'll be delighted.
Yeah.
There was like, even though we were walking, we were sort of at pace with him for a good few meters. And I'm like mouthing to Rosie, it's Wenger.
But I didn't, oh my God, that's amazing.
I was in my wellies, genuinely in wellies, because it had been raining that much and it's that muddy on this route. And I just thought, I don't know, do I go running with him? And in the end, I obviously just did nothing. I did nothing.
Oh, what?
I was sort of a bit starstruck.
Oh, you've got to go.
Josh.
I'd have gone up and said, I love you. I love you. And then I'd shake it. As you well know, I've met him, a couple of times before. And I'd say, remember when we met before? And he'd say, no, I do not remember. And I'm trying to walk on my own, thank you. But I think I'd have to have said something. Like, I once saw Thierry Henry and Gilberto Silva having lunch in Soho House. And my wife was like, you cannot go over. Like, it's one of the rules of the place. Yes. Like, you're not allowed to go.
Yeah, that's the whole point of Soho House.
And I was sitting there going, I know, but I always said if I see Thierry Henry, I've got to go. And I didn't go and say hello. But the fact I just stared at him for 10 minutes was quite exciting.
Age 70... And running on this trail was amazing. He was running. I've just
Fair enough.
He was running at you know, not a fast pace, but, you know, a pace where in wellies it would have looked really strange if I was trying to go alongside him.
Hossein!
Yeah.
Hossein!
And also, I thought he might be a bit worried for his safety. There's no one else around. So I just left him.
Josh, your tactical error here, you had a brilliant way in, which was your pregnant wife. If you've got, you know, if you're alongside a pregnant woman, he can't ignore, he can't be rude to you. You can't be rude with a pregnant woman in tow. And so you could have had a major interaction with him and you missed out. Oh,
what I should have done is she should have screamed in pain or something.
Yeah.
So that he would have felt obliged and I would have gone, I haven't got a phone or something.
He could have got his phone out.
Then would have got him to ring a family member. So I'd have had his mobile. That would have been a clever idea.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if it happens again.
But presumably he goes running there regularly.
I think so. But it will feel weird if I go hang out, especially in this weather, in the rain and the cold outside, hoping he's going to come by.
It wouldn't be weird at all. I also wanted, funnily enough, the other thing I wanted to mention before we talk about the other more topical things is, did you see, I don't know if you saw on Twitter, someone tweeted about Nicholas Bentner's got a book out as well.
Oh, yeah, I've read some of this.
Yeah, the Arsenal legend, second only to Dennis Bergkamp and Arsene Wenger. Yeah. His book is called Both Sides. Explosive is described as explosive. But there's a brilliant bit of it where he talks about his funnily enough, his transfer day negotiation with Arsene Wenger and where he wanted to leave Arsenal. Wenger wouldn't let him. And this is the deal dialogue. Wenger says, I'm afraid your transfer isn't going to happen. We've not been able to buy the striker we needed, so you're our backup. That's your job for next year. I hang up. I look at my agent, who shrugs his shoulders. Then I call back and I say a bunch of pretty ugly, disrespectful stuff like asshole and wanker. These are asterisks, by the way, but they're clearly asshole and wanker. So he's calling Wenger an asshole and wanker, first of all. Then he says to Arsene Wenger, we can't stand each other anymore, I say, ending my tirade. It'll be best if we parted ways. Wenger says, well, OK, that's quite possible, but it's not going to happen. See you at training.
It's exceptional from Wenger. He's literally slammed him. He slammed Bender.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. It's brilliant, isn't it?
I'm just going to... Now, I let my dog out, and now I need to shut the door, which is now wide open, but the dog is back in.
Yeah, we're keeping this in.
Listen, this is podcast. Yeah. It's a new normal, yeah? New normal.
Totally, yeah.
This is the new normal that we're all enjoying. Now, Boyd, what have you been doing during transfer deadline day today? Have you been able to concentrate on any work?
Annoyingly, I had to write quite a long article this morning, as it was all happening. But I have had, do you know what? I've had. It's funny. I was going to mention this. I've had Sky Sports News, which has had deadline day all day, obviously. But it's really slow. They're much too slow on Sky Sports News. I don't want to offend anyone.
There is said dog.
He's cute, isn't he?
He is.
He's very cute. I'm just complaining about Sky Sports News transfer deadline day coverage. It's very slow because so in this day and age, like I think years ago, I remember watching when you're watching 10 years ago before Twitter and all this, it was thrilling because you were relying on them to show you and all the people outside the ground.
Yeah, the big
and all
purple
that stuff
dildo,
dildo, yeah, exactly. Harry Redknapp winding the window down.
Oh, God, those are the days, yeah.
He's on live.
Of course,
now.
He is.
Yeah,
we're going to try and sign Nico Cranky. We hope we can get him over the line. We'll see. Jermaine Defoe is going to come and play. He's 41, but we're excited.
He's on with Jamie.
Good.
Now
that's good.
That's double effort. Anyway, but now you see stuff like so. When early on Twitter it broke that Thomas Partey was back on, because yesterday everyone was saying it's over for OR and Partey. Have been our two big targets clearly the whole since the summer, perhaps even earlier. And everyone was going, it's over, it's not going to happen. Award doesn't want to come. Party, we can't afford it, blah, 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 blah. And then today, all of a sudden, earlier this morning, it was someone's, I can't remember which journalist was actually. Can you remember?
Charles Watts, wasn't it?
It was Charles Watts, thank you.
It's funny because I text James McNicholas, Gunnerblog, and said, I was like, what any news on Partey? And he just went, nah, nothing's going to happen. maybe some players out.
but very much doubt it. And then 10 minutes later was when all the stuff had come through. Right. And and then he just replied, he goes, well, things, you know, things change very quickly. But yeah, just like mad. It's all happening now.
It's all happening. So, yeah, so he got Charles, you're right, Charles Watts got the story first, which is brilliant for him. And but we have to say, A.F. Camden, who regular guest on this show, he kept saying all weekends that something was going to happen. And it flew in the face of everyone. And this morning I tweeted him saying, are you still optimistic? And he's like, yeah, I still think. He said, if we're not going to finally push Partey over the edge or whatever, it will be completely unbelievable. And he's been, and it looks like he's right. We haven't got the video announcement footage yet.
Oh, yeah.
Which I like to hold back until
hashtag
we get
party
that.
Time or something.
Hashtag party time, exactly. Yeah. But it's looking pretty likely now, isn't it?
Well, but isn't it this AFC Bell or something? Because I saw that going around, but he predicted it back in August that it was going to happen on deadline day.
Yeah.
So that's maybe incredible. This is all, I mean, people in the know. We're not in that's the know, guys.
ITK. That is But AF Camden is a proper, I have to give him respect because I was starting to very much doubt the veracity of his claims. But let's talk about this whole thing, deadline day. Is that, you know, party, everyone, I think you get, transfers are weird, aren't they? Like, you hear the story from everyone that we're interested in a player, and this is a classic example, Partey and AOR to some extent as well. It goes on for months and months and months. You finally get him, apparently on deadline day, for quite a lot of money, by the way, which again backs up my obsessive theory that in the end, because we've just at the moment we're just getting you know, a player off on loan, and you know, we are spending $45 million on this player, which money we've barely got. So in the end, you can push it through. And go on, Josh.
No, but what seems to be interesting here is obviously we talk about Nicola Pepe, don't we, about, you know, that being staggered over 5 years. I mean, the understanding here from what I read, I don't know if you read it differently, is that this is one lump sum.
Right.
And apparently, that is
incredible.
That is a real
magic money tree. Magic money
sign
tree.
Of intent.
Yeah. But my question is, A, to who knows how good Partey is? Who has studied him? Yeah. And
no
B,
idea.
I mean, he's a central midfielder. He's described as a defensive central midfielder. He's not the creative. AOR was the creative one that a lot of people were craving. He's not that. But what I do, you know, he's played against Arsenal. We have seen him. And I was reading up on him, you know, throughout the day. And he seems to be a player who can spray it around, intercept, incredibly accurate passing, but also tackle properly. He so kind he, of seems to be a bit of an all-round, in theory, Vieira-type player. And I'm
and
using
then when
that
you
name.
Look at, when you look at how much Arteta has been playing Elneny, and I think Elneny's done really well, but it's like looks like Partey is a big upgrade on Elneny, and it will slot into that position there. And obviously they've got so many games because, you know, I can't believe Xhaka didn't start a game for once. But, you know, Xhaka will come in and out. Ceballos, I think, has been looking like a Real Madrid player. And, you know, I think, I know we're going to get onto the game, but, you know, looking at Willian in that central position, Aubameyang in the central position, and then we've got sick wingers on the right and the left. And it is starting to, you know, I think it's an important signing.
Yeah, definitely. Josh, what do you think? Because I'm still seeing some. There was a lot of first thing in the morning when Arsenal fans were being typically furious about the fact that we seemingly weren't going to sign either of these players, and some of the older heads, shall we say, were treating that with some disdain. I think there's a whole. There's a whole tranche, isn't there, if I can use that word, of football fans, and not Arsenal fans, same as that, every single club. Football fandom, and this is going to sound very patronising, but I think it's true, young football fans on social media clamouring for signings and getting really angry when the signing that in theory they were going for doesn't happen, even though there was never any official confirmation, of course, by anyone, is the thing now. And almost like ranking, being absolutely furious about it, when signings don't happen is incredible. It's such a thing now. I think I'm absolutely thrilled if we're getting this one player on top of the squad that we've got at the moment.
Well, I think I was sort of getting myself to a point of
if we don't sign anyone, because it very much looked like we weren't going to sign anyone, of just going, well, you know, we signed a load of players at the beginning of last season and it was all very exciting. We got Tierney, we got Pepe, and it was like, oh my God, here we go. But Emery was in charge. And I think in the same way, the other way, that it's like, if we didn't get any players, then it's still Arteta in charge, which is still great. And, you know, he's improving every single player we have. So it wouldn't have been an end of the world if we'd not got Partey. And Gabriel's looked really, really good. And hopefully, like, maybe Saliba will come in as well this year. So, you know, I think... I don't think it would be the end of the world, but it looks like it's a positive thing. But we'll just have to wait and see. There's loads of teams have signed players that just take a lot of time. And I think people need to chill, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But to address the creativity thing, because people are going to say, already people are saying, this is what I meant to say just now, I didn't actually end up saying it, is that people are going, well, Aouar was the one we needed because he's the creative one. And that's what we're lacking. Mm. But as you were alluding to, in the game yesterday, we ended up, when he changed the formation, when he put Aubameyang central and Pepe came on, we ended up with Pepe, Aubameyang, Saka, being creative.
And William behind. Pepe.
Yeah, William behind. William who hadn't had a good game up until then, I think. That game, by the way, I think was a great for Pepe in every single way.
Yeah.
And this is what I've been hoping for. To you know, it's almost great that he didn't pick him to start with. He came on as a sub, had an instant impact, scored a brilliant goal, had a huge amount. I just think he is the creative player. He is, and I think Saka as well. I think if Arteta works out a way of keeping both of those in the team, you know, in like they should both be first names on his team sheet. And I tweeted that over the weekend about Pepe, and I wasn't joking. I think he's so important to us as a creative outlet.
And I think, you know, I know Lacazette scored 3-3, but I think the way Lacazette played for the rest of that Liverpool game, the way he played the other day, the way Eddie Nketiah played the other day, I just don't think there is any other formation or any other position that Aubameyang can play than up front. And I've tried to be the sort of, oh no, mate, no, he works well and he still scores off the left. And it's like, you can't be giving those chances to anyone other than Aubameyang. And his movement is so good. And so for me, it's like, that's the only way you get Saka in that team is having Aubameyang in the middle and with Pepe on the right, Willian behind him. And that's a brilliant front four.
It's exciting, isn't it? Josh, I mean, I've been one of those people who've totally defended Aubameyang out wide. I mean, purely because we've kind of got through a lot of games in the end winning or certainly not losing we've had this situation for months, haven't we? And it's kind of, you know, it's been okay, but there was an extra level of excitement, wasn't there, when he went central yesterday?
Yeah, it was the obvious change, wasn't it, that was going to have to be made in terms of the game. And you thought if we're going to come on and win it, he was going to, you know, probably reach for Pepe ahead of Lacazette to come off the bench just to be able to put Aubameyang through the middle. The creativity question that you mentioned before was undoubtedly what fans sitting there at halftime would have been talking about yesterday, because that first half possibly had less aspects of Emery times of lack, but with a difference that we weren't having loads of shots on our goal, but with a potential lack of creativity, a bit of bluntness. With Partey coming, clearly, Arsenal fans will always be on this are we 15 years since Vieira left us on this? Are we finally placing Patrick Vieira? But from, again, I can't sit and pretend I'm an expert and have watched him play any more than the occasional sort of Champions League game. But here is in a player who undoubtedly walks straight into our team. Luke's highlighted the point of Elneny getting opportunities. I think it's great. And he obviously has a role to play in the squad. But it would be a bit of a surprise if his sort of Arsenal exile sort of came back into him being a regular member of a starting 11. You know, Lucas Torreira is presumably going the other way in the next couple of hours on a loan with a view to a move. It seems a pretty clear upgrade on Torreira, which, even though his Arsenal career started so brightly, hasn't been for almost a year, really, hasn't been on sort of the level that perhaps it was hoped it would be. So that's just exciting, isn't it? To know here we are signing a guy that's going to go straight into our team, really experienced. This isn't like a Saliba, a 19-year-old out of the French league. Here is an experienced international who's played for the third best team in Spain. He's got international experience. So I'm excited about it. And I think you're right, Boyd. You know, with the right front three, there's enough creativity that's going on there. And I was just listening to a few of the journalists, the foreign football journalists on the radio earlier, saying, well, don't underestimate, you know, Partey's ability to spray a ball, to be a bit creative. You know, don't write him off purely as a, you know, as a tackler and to do the simple stuff. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think you're right, though. Once people get into this buzzword of OAR and it trends on Twitter and then, like, it got so public, didn't it? Because you had the president of Lille coming out and talking about it. So when that does happen, fans are naturally going to be more frustrated. But who knows how many other things like that went on this summer. We just didn't have the president talking about it.
I mean, I definitely tweeted OAR and said, come to join Arsenal, please.
So that didn't help. Not, that way
I know. He really hates being image. Furious.
Yeah. He's known for it. Yeah.
Yeah,
but the weird thing about... It's funny, isn't it? Because the weird thing about the Torreira, for a start, it suddenly struck me. That's been a really weird situation with him for me. Like, because I thought he was really good to start with. I thought he made quite an instant impact. And I remember banging on about how good he was on this fucking podcast for a start, you know, in his first few weeks/months at Arsenal. And I've always really liked him. And I thought I thought he was the future of our midfield. No, I was never that keen on Guendouzi. I always thought Guendouzi was a bit ramshackle all over the place. But Torreira seemed to be a big upgrade to our midfield when he signed. And now clearly Arteta completely didn't fancy him at all, obviously. And we're now, it's just weird, isn't it, when you think about it, that just didn't work. And he looked so good initially.
Well, there were so many reports of him being homesick. And maybe there is a lot more truth behind that. And because it's not like he doesn't seem like an Arteta player. You know, he works really hard, gives everything on the pitch. And he was... He was brilliant at the start and got forward. And then, but yeah, it's just maybe he was. I mind you, if he's homesick, I don't know why he's going to Spain. So I don't know. But
I mean, he is tiny, isn't he, Torreira? And then he was a slight anomaly, literally a slight anomaly.
Yeah.
In that he was a tiny little guy who had no, obviously, very little physical. I mean, this Partey seems to be a much more physical presence.
I think that
kind of athleticism is what we always, particularly Arsenal, need, I think, in players, because for a long time we didn't have that. But I also think, even though he's described as defensive, not particularly creative, I think in La Liga defensive kind of is that they're all technically good, aren't they, those players? Mm. Like you don't play, as you said, Josh, for one of the better teams in Spain in La Liga and not be technically proficient, even if you're ostensibly a defensive player.
Especially for Simeone as well.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah.
And here is a guy that also didn't miss many games last year. I think he played all but three of the La Liga games. So, you know, a real regular, you know, and that's got to be encouraging as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's now 7:35 and he hasn't signed yet. But I mean, if this goes out, by the time this podcast goes out, like tomorrow/Wednesday, if something's gone wrong in this signing, everyone listening, don't blame me. But right now, I mean, it would be frankly ridiculous if we don't sign him. Carry on, Josh.
It's funny you're talking there, Boyd, aren't you, about Lucas Torreira's not fall from grace, that's probably exaggerating it, but fall from being a certain starter and being so wonderfully received in those early months. You know, probably so too Guendouzi. You know, his fall from grace is huge. You know, here was someone who was seemingly quite liked by the manager and was being selected, you know, arguably ahead of a established international like a Lucas Torreira. And this is another sign, isn't it, that we've got a completely ruthless manager who isn't going to put up with it. And that moment at Brighton will be, well, it seems unlikely that his Arsenal career would be resurrected after this loan move, but could be the end of him, really.
And also, his few of his tweets are a bit. I saw Guendouzi's tweets a bit snidey back. Sort of like people go, like, you know, he quote tweeted someone going, "Gonna miss you. Gonna nice to see you smiling and playing again." And it, you know, his reply was like, "Yeah, wink face." Like, and there was another one where it's sort of like, "It's just gonna be good to be playing again and stuff." You know, and it's like, well, you know, I'd really trust Arteta. I don't know what's gone on there, but it's like, I'd say that if you're on board, then your Arteta will play you. And he was playing him. And if you're going to be a little shit, then you're going to be kicked out of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's clearly a little shit element to him, isn't there? Mm-hmm. I think that. I mean, you see that on the pitch. We saw that on the pitch,
as you say.
We saw that in his social media. Yeah, I'm absolutely. He's exactly the player we should. People are complaining again about the sheer numbers because we are light in midfield. We're very light in central midfield, and we're getting rid of two. Torreira and Guendouzi, it plays in that position. Yet we've got about a dozen centre backs, or people who can play at centre back. So that, and that, there is a truth to that. But when it comes down to like the player that we can reasonably get rid of in quotes and get some kind and get off our books, Torreira and Guendouzi seems very sensible to me. I mean, Torreira, I would be perfectly happy if he stayed. But if that's going to enable us to get a better version of him in party, then fine, fine. But the squad is still unbalanced. But I don't know if, you know, it's just the way the situation got into, isn't it, Josh?
It is slightly. I mean, also today, the two that got into, you know, fighting off the robbers, you know, Kolasinac doesn't look like he's leaving the club where there's been so much talk. Yeah. Supposed to be going, look like it's done. And then if we believe the same Twitter authorities that have been fairly proven correct today, then, you know, that move to Germany was going to be, wasn't it, on loan is not happening. And of course, Mesut Ozil hasn't even been anything. There's been no smoke at all about him leaving the club in the last few days of the window. So, you know, now that's out the way, you know, do you think it's conceivable, you know, Boyd, Luke, because the window was still open, you know, maybe what do you do with the Ozil situation? Now he is absolutely with you. Do you think there's any, are we going to see him? Do you think now it changes at all? That
I don't think so. And I think, you know, as much as like, I'm a massive Ozil fan, but, you know, I just think that we all need to let it go. And just, you think about in a year's time, when there's so many of those players that they're trying to get rid of are out of contract. And you think, hopefully, if we can have a good season that's built on the last season, then all those players are going to leave. And then it really is going to look positive. You know, I still think Ozil would do a brilliant job in this team, but he ain't going to play. So we just need to let it go. Like, he's gone. He's gone off with someone else. Like, we have to just let it go now.
Yeah. I think it would take, like, injuries to every single one of our central midfield players. And then, you know, then resorting to putting a central defender in that position.
And it's sad. You know, it's really sad. But, you know, that's what it's become.
Yeah, that story, the full details of that story are yet to come out on there, I think. Or at least, you know, it's such a complicated situation, I think. I would be astonished if he came back in any way, shape or form into the team. And I agree with you, Luke. I think we just have to get over it. I am over it and carry on. What did we think? Let's talk about more about yesterday's game, though. Again, I mean, it was unbelievably boring for the first half, wasn't it? But yet, like, I feel like it was Sheffield United who had a terrible start to the season, hadn't scored yet, had they? I think they were, like, desperate to get at least a draw from that game. And, like, they were really on it in terms of, like, their shape. It was like they were absolutely rigid. They, you know, there was a made it very, very difficult for us to penetrate. So I was kind of like, it was a frustrating, but I think this has happened quite a lot, I feel, with this. Like, this is the kind of game, you know, 18 months ago, certainly 2-3 years ago, we would have failed to win. Mm-hmm. And by hook or by crook, I feel, with Arteta, we eke out these wins now against this kind of situation. We find a way. In this case, he actually changed the system and everything, which he hasn't really done much. But I thought that actually, in the end, you're like, oh, this is kind of great that, you know, whilst Man United are letting in six,
and
exactly, Liverpool letting in seven, particularly on that day, yesterday, the day of football madness, as it shall forever be known.
Yeah,
Arsenal are like now like the sensible team, the kind of difficult to beat.
He has got a solid.
We're the solid ones,
and we've wanted that for so. I've certainly wanted that for so long. It's just like, someone coached the defence, you know, for years under Wenger, then under Emery. And it's like, and he really is doing that. Yeah, like, when you look at Everton, you know, you can be a bit envious and it's like, oh my God, they're creating so many chances. And it's like, why are we not doing that? But, you know, look, if we can be solid and just get the results going and then build from there. Like, I'm not getting overexcited. But I know a lot of Arsenal fans that are sort of saying, and you hear the media as well. You know, I was Chris Sutton and Robbie Savage saying, you know, they've gotten playing, Arteta's gotten playing so well and it's very exciting at Arsenal. And I'm still just like, let's see, like, you know, like a still feel like we're the sixth or seventh best team in the league at the moment. And I think if we finish below someone like Everton, that is pretty criminal. We like, you know, we've there's a long way to go, but let's build from a solid base.
But my theory, I agree with, I think, yeah, I am again overexcited. I'm quite, you know, open about that.
Yeah.
My levels of overexcitement, but a lot of that is based on what I think the absolute crapness of Man United and their manager.
Yeah.
To a slightly lesser extent, the potential crapness of Chelsea. Like, Chelsea are going to vary wildly.
Yeah.
From game to game, from week to week, from month to month. I don't feel like their manager, lovely guy, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think he's Arteta level.
No, nowhere near. He's a FIFA
manager. Then you look at, yeah, exactly right. And those results yesterday, I just thought it was, you know, everything, the whole fucking world of football is going genuinely insane, apart from us. And that there's something brilliant about that. You know, like, you can see why. I think what happened yesterday for me, again, shows why Arteta's goes for this kind of very technical, very, you know, setup where everyone knows what they're doing. And it may not be thrilling yet, apart from in bursts, you know. Yeah. So I think in bursts and on the counter. Yeah.
Those two goals were exceptional.
Yeah, brilliant, beautiful. Yeah. But like, it could well be that 70% of the time it is fairly dull because we're just keeping things on the low, keeping things steady. Keeping things tight and steady seems to be. And when you look at what happened yesterday, it's like, well, fair enough. Because we were that team. We were the team that would always let in 5-6 against the big teams not so long ago, Josh.
Well, that's exactly what we were saying before, wasn't it? That it felt like arguably times under Emery going forward, but certainly not going backwards, because we didn't look like we were particularly going to, you know, concede for the vast majority of the game yesterday. So, yeah, I just think, I don't know if I mentioned it on last week's podcast, but I love the way Arteta celebrates at the end of games. He is proper giving it the fist pumps. You know, it doesn't matter if it was the FA Cup final or Sheffield United at home. And he's just finding a way to win as many games as possible. And it's an obvious thing to say, but four games into the season, for us to have won three of them, given we had a trip to Anfield, we're in a great position, given what's going on all around us with teams dropping points. And, you know, this season, what you need to come forth might not be the same points total as you're going to need, you know, as from previous seasons. You know, obviously the league might even itself out. But, you know, right now, you look at the squad that we've assembled, Partey included, and I feel more confident than I would have done sort of at the back end of last season. Just suddenly, the stability that we seem to have now as a club, even the decisive decisions to get rid of Martinez at split fans, to get rid of Guendouzi, to just lose Torreira if he's not the right guy, it just seems like we, you know, we so clearly have a man with a plan who has been decisive and who you now have to say, and I know you asked the question, didn't you, last week to Alan Algaboyd about Arsenal's odds for the top four. Just based on what's happened this weekend, we are pretty much now viewed in the same way as Man United by the bookmakers. It's pretty much even with who's, you know, favourite for that fourth spot. And, you know, long may it continue.
Yeah, that's interesting. What did you think, Luke, about that? A lot of the pundits spent a long time going on about the Luiz foul, the shirt tug in the first few minutes. Well, of the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't think it was, I thought it was the right decision in the game. But then, like, I'm in an Arsenal Arsenal WhatsApp group with Tom Rosenthal and comedian Luke McQueen. And like, they just had a go at me calling my opinion pub opinion. But I was just like, because I was just like, that happens in a split second. Like, he barely touches him. And then he was just like, nah, like, he pulls him back. If he doesn't, then he gets the chance and he would have got to the ball before Leno. But for me, it was just like such the tiniest little thing. And that's Luiz needs to have in his head in that split second of going, don't do anything to grab him. And I know me shouldn't do that, but I think it'd be a mad sending off.
I think I would not have been surprised. In fact, I half expect him to be sent off because really? he definitely did grab him. As you say, it wasn't exactly a dangerous grab. Yeah. He literally it was a little tug. But what angered me, so I wouldn't have been surprised to have been sent off. I would have been furious more at him than anything, because he definitely it definitely was a stupid thing for him to do, to even touch him. And the keeper was rushing out, you know.
Yeah.
The keeper was doing, he was doing a good job, Leno, at that point. Mm-hmm. And also, even if they'd have scored that early on in the game, you know, it's plenty of, anyway, so all that. But what really infuriated me was the fact that the foul on Aubameyang,
yeah,
that almost badly injured him. You know, he was hobbling off for half time. Thankfully, he was fine. That was terrible. That was a red card for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had the Mane situation. You know, imagine if that had happened. If he'd been selfish, we'd gone on to win that game. We'd be fucking top of the league. Anyway.
But when you look at, like, the way Martial got sent off yesterday, and you look at that Mane situation, you just cannot believe it. Like, that isn't, for me, that's just 100% a red card.
Yeah.
I know you've probably talked about it already, but, you know, I do think the other tackle was way worse than the David Luiz thing that they didn't mention at all. I know Sky have only got coverage of about 3.5 minutes in half time, but they just didn't mention they didn't mention it at all. They just went all about this David Luiz thing. Because I tell you what, David Luiz, someone said this to me the other day, if David Luiz had shorter hair, people wouldn't bring it up all the time about him being this clown. Because he isn't. True, he's a brilliant defender, and he actually played really well yesterday, apart from that stupid thing. And and I just think it's like something happens with, it's the same with Ozil. It's like, oh, well, Ozil's been lazy then. It's like they've got something, the media. They've got, and it's just their easy go-to thing.
Well, and I think the referees. I think if Xhaka, if Xhaka had committed that foul.
Yeah.
The foul on one of their players, he's gone. He would have been gone. You know, if he'd have done that, the elbow, the Mane style, he would have been gone.
Yeah, absolutely. No matter what minute of the game, gone.
Yeah. It does affect the referees, and of course VAR is supposed to be getting rid of all this stuff, and it just is failing miserably to do so. But you're right; it was the punditry. Do you know, it was Alan Smith, wasn't it? I'm going to launch a semi attack on Alan Smith.
Smudger.
Love him, lovely guy, Arsenal legend. Don't get me wrong; I would never dare say this to his face, and I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. I'd be amazed if he does. But he is he's so boring on Sky. He always does Arsenal games, right? He always does Arsenal games, obviously. You know exactly what he's going to say, but he never says anything insightful or interesting at all. He's like the anti-Gary Neville, you know, completely pointless, except his views on things like, he was completely fine with that tackle on Aubameyang. He was like, yeah, I think it's a book. I don't think it's a sending off. I was just like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he makes an instant decision about things like that a lot, and never ever goes back and thinks about it again. And no one ever picks up on it. And you're like, are you sure? That looks really bad. Studs in, full on, foul. On
Short-cross style tackle.
Right. And Alan Smith's like shrugging and doesn't care. He doesn't give a shit. Yeah. That's my Alan Smith rant. Out of the way. We'll talk more about that game. We'll talk more about. We haven't really got predictions to make because it's a boring international week. But we'll talk to Luke and Josh Moore about Arsenal after this break.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean. And more Steve McQueen. Check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
And we're back from the grape. Sorry, and we're back from the break. Back from the grape. Back from the grape.
Yeah.
I'm not drinking. Luke, so what? Both the goals were brilliant yesterday. Saka, we have to talk about Saka.
Yeah.
What a joy. Again, not only what a day, he's picked for the England squad. He's gone off for the England squad today. Scores an amazing headed goal. Totally unlikely. He's a tiny little guy.
I didn't think he could get the power in that position.
I know.
He really did. I've got Saka on the back of my shirt, my new Arsenal shirt.
Oh, nice.
Love it. Nice. Little chilling. Yeah.
What I was going to say was, the interview. Did you watch the interview on Sky?
Yeah.
Oh, what a delight.
Yeah. No, he's just great. He's, you know, and it's so exciting. And he's only like 19. And also, we're all forgetting that we've got Martinelli as well. Look, he was in unreal form. And that's why Aubameyang, and I defended it so long, but he has to play centre forward because then Saka can play on the left. And then when Martinelli, he can play on the left. And then if Saka is covering at left back, with defensively, Aubameyang can come across to that left side and be there for that counter-attack like he does so brilliantly in the FA Cup final, in the semi-final. And it's just like, sorry, I've gone back to another point, but it just makes perfect sense that you Aubameyang has to be the striker to help people like Saka.
I see what you're saying, but I think it's almost more to help incorporate Saka and Pepe.
Yeah.
You know, for me, like, it makes it easier to incorporate those players if Aubameyang is playing central. And I love Lacazette. And I'm glad he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Because he will always be an option, won't he? But I think we'll have to live with it. You know, because you'd think after seeing what happened, after the game change, literally the game changer of that move, that shift yesterday, you'd think Arteta would go, well, I have to give this a go, don't you? Wouldn't you? Like, you know, this formation and put Aubameyang in the middle.
I know, and we'll see. I just wonder what Aubameyang says, because, you know, it feels like him and Arteta are in, you know, in such sort of strong dialogue with each other. I'd be surprised if he's not said, you know, play me through the middle, boss, you know. thing, you know, like, I would be surprised if he hasn't had that conversation at some point, but I don't know, you know. But I mean, look,
I think Aubameyang is so happy, as you alluded to with your impression of his laugh. Constant laugh.
No, I love it.
It's amazing. I think he's such a positive guy that he almost like completely accepts wherever he's picked to play. And also is so self-confident, he thinks he can score from wherever he is, pitch. And of course, he's proven time and again he can score from position as well. But I think it's more about the whole team's creativity that's going to be helped by that formation. Josh, did you see the interview that I was talking about with Saka? And what a contrast between that and about 10 minutes earlier, they had fucking Harry Maguire, who's the most boring man in the world. Well, even more boring than Alan Smith. Saka was fantastic, wasn't he? Just so likeable and charming and natural.
Yeah, he did. It was with Laura Woods, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On the touchline. Yeah, and you even felt in her questioning that she was kind of feeling that he was a really sweet
guy. Oh, no, he did a sit-down interview first. He did a sit-down.
I didn't see the sit-down.
Oh, yeah,
I was talking about his post-match, which
No.
The game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't see
he did a proper sit-down interview. Yeah, in the epic build-up. They had a full hour of build-up. They interviewed Harry Maguire. They had kind of a lot of build-up about the Man United game.
Yeah.
Harry Maguire was literally like watching paint dry. And then Saka came on in a sit-down interview, and he was talking about his parents and what they had to deal with. They found it cold in this country, and talking about doing his... He talked about getting A-pluses, A-stars.
Yeah, no, he smashed
his exams.
His GCSEs, didn't he? Or A-levels.
And then they referred to that back in the second interview, as you said, yeah.
Did he talk about God? He quite likes a mention of God, from what I've noticed of him.
He mentioned God in the post-match interview, but he didn't mention God in the pre-match, funnily enough.
Maybe what happened is, when he woke up on Saturday and read the Saturday Times and saw what Arsene Wenger had to say about God, he thought, there's something in this. And he's actually got quite religious overnight ahead of the Sheffield United game.
I think No, he talked about how he was asked when he found out that he was picked for England. And he said he was on the plane. It must have been coming back from wherever Thursday's game was. Is that right? I think so.
Yeah, Liverpool.
Yeah, Liverpool. And he got an email. I think he said got a text or email from like the official England team thing, saying you have been, and he kind of said it word for word, like a very formal, you have officially been selected by the English FA to play.
Really?
The squad.
Is that how he found out?
Right, yeah, which is fascinating. Exactly.
Didn't get called up from Gary Southgate.
Didn't get a call. No, maybe they did call him, but he was in the middle of the flight and could not answer the phone.
Right.
So he got this message on his phone, and he said he just kept staring at it and could not move and could not believe it. And so you got this picture of little Saka literally sitting there, and he said everyone else had got off the plane, and Laka had to like elbow him in the head to tell him to get off the fucking plane because he was so mesmerized and thrilled by this news from England. Yeah.
And then did he then tell Laka what had happened? Or did he...
Yeah, then he told him, and everyone was like, fucking out. Everyone was like, incredibly happy.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. Oh, I'll have to go and find that. That sounds brilliant.
Yeah, have a look. Yeah, hopefully you'll find it on Sky. Yeah. So I think we're fairly. Go on, Josh.
Well, no, I just, you know, not to bring the tone down, but I can't let the Gunnosaurus story go without saying. Where were you when you heard the news, Boyd?
I was working this morning, and I saw it was Ornstein, wasn't it? I think. That's where I saw it. Ornstein announces most things. I'm amazed he didn't get the party story first, but he didn't. But he did get the Gunnosaurus story first, or at least he did for me.
I saw him Paddy Power, so I thought it was a joke.
Oh, really?
I thought it was like, because you know, they're sort of like a joke account at times. So I was like, oh, it's just a transfer deadline day joke that we've sacked Gunnosaurus. But no, it's no joke, true. It is awful. Of course it is. And I didn't realize it was a guy that had worked there for 27 years. And I saw like Ian Wright's tribute to him and my good friend Piers Morgan's tribute to him. But like, I'm surprised because also it's sort of, I'm sure when the fans are back, they'll have another job for him. I understand that it's like, well, how long is that going to be? What's the guy going to do for work? Which I completely understand. But like that, the world is in the shit at the moment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
do you not? I just think it's this sorry, might Josh, be Boyd. You know, when in a normal office environment, which I don't have a lot of experience of, admittedly, but like if a colleague leaves, someone else just has to take their work. I'm just wondering if there's someone like in the marketing department who's gone, listen, there's good news. You're not going to lose your job. We'll keep you on. The bad news is that every home match day, this is your new outfit. I mean, like, are they just giving the job to someone else? Gunnosaurus is going to live on, surely, in someone else.
Of course, he is.
Yeah, Mesut Ozil could do it for a start.
Yeah.
He's not doing anything
else. I'll do it. I'm up for it.
Luke would do it. I mean, but in all seriousness, I do think you're right. And it is, obviously, it's a kind of surreal story in some ways. But there is, for me, it does sum up a soullessness at the heart of our club, I have to say. Because I just think on the same day that you pay a 45 million when you have financial difficulties. But don't get me wrong, I'm thrilled with buying him. Absolutely thrilled with buying him. We're finding the money from somewhere, who knows where, to buy this player with a lump sum. And at the same time, you lay off your legendary multi-decade mascot. I just think, I hate the phrase, the optics, the bad optics. It's a horrible kind of like glib, you know, political phrase. But in this case, it's like, have some wherewithal. Just they could have just said, could have furloughed him. You know, furloughing.
Yeah, I know.
People seem to think that furloughing is something only the government can do in their furlough scheme. But companies do it. You could have just said to him quietly, without any fanfare, without the Athletic bloody finding out, we don't need you, obviously, for the next 6 months. We'll still pay you, or pay you 80% of your wage or whatever, and we'll get you back when the crowd's... Instead, this has happened.
Totally agree.
I don't know his contract with the club. Like he's not a full-time employee.
Wherever he is, however it works, someone has been told that we're sacking him. I mean, that is fucking ridiculous.
How much do you reckon Gunnosaurus gets paid?
So we've got to get Gunnosaurus on the podcast.
Yeah, Dino's mouth.
Yeah, from the Dino's mouth. We tried to get Jeremy Corbyn. I still want to get Keir Starmer. Big Arsenal fan, Keir Starmer.
Oh, I didn't know that. There
you go. Yeah, yeah. Do a spitting image sketch on that. I thought the Keir Starmer sketch on spitting image was really good, by the way.
Yeah, so did I.
His boring lawyerly talk is incredibly annoying, isn't it?
Yeah. And I thought, the Elton John trying to sex him up. It's a really good, very, very funny sketch.
That was really funny. Anyway, so we still need to get Keir Starmer on, but maybe Gunnosaurus is an even more important request. Josh.
Yeah, no, I take the point. It's an important one. The network will have to be going out looking for Jerry. I don't know if he'd want to talk about it, but I don't know if he signed an NDA, Boyd.
But surely other teams are dealing with similar situations. It seems always so public.
It's always
Arsenal.
Us.
It's like if they're laying someone off, front page news that Arsenal, like every company is struggling. And I'm loyal to think, we're Arsenal, we're such a classy club and stuff like that. But it's like, you know, every company is struggling at the moment. I know it's hard when you look at how much money we're spending, but every football team is about what's on the pitch. And if they have to make cuts, then, I mean, I don't know. I'm not involved in the club, so I don't know. But I just think Arsenal Twitter just goes mad about absolutely everything, good or bad.
Oh, of course, yeah. I think that's football Twitter, though, in general.
No, it is. Yeah, it is football Twitter, yeah.
I think fans are very... But yeah,
I just follow it's weird, isn't it? Accounts, yeah.
But it is, you're right, it's absolutely classic that I haven't heard any story about any other club mascot at all, and yet Gunnosaurus gets the story on him. So obviously Gunnosaurus is a more iconic figure, probably, than most other club mascots, but still, it's still sad. So we've now got a massive gap, haven't we? We've got, like, till the Saturday the 17th, I think.
Yeah.
When we play City away, so we'll fit another podcast before then, presumably, Josh.
Well, it's very much up to you, but I think such will be the excitement over the party situation that we may need a week to calm down and reassess. But yeah, it's a 5:30 kickoff on Sky Sports on the 17th. So,
and we've drawn them in the bloody Carabao Cup, of course.
In the Carabao.
I think we'll beat them in that.
Yeah, maybe.
We should beat him in the league the way they're playing, but like Guerrero's back in training and he likes a goal against us. So yeah, we'll see.
We will. But I think generally we're positive, aren't we? I think I'm
positive, but I'm remaining grounded. I'm remaining grounded. There's a long way
to
go.
You're an example to us all.
I think we've got these 10 games, beginning of the season, we've already played four, where there's lots of important fiction in there. We've got, you know, I think we've got City, Leicester, United in the next three games. And it's like, you know, look, get through that and we're still around at the top four. And then we've got Villa, so things will get a bit harder with them. Like, you know, if we're still around after 10 games, then I might be even more positive. But I just think it's like, let's just see.
It's a hectic time coming up because we've got the Europa and you have like two or three games a week pretty much, when the Europa arrives. We've got
Rapid Vienna.
Yeah.
Dundalk.
Yeah, that's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, more exciting if we could go.
But... I know, yeah, exactly.
Josh?
Yeah, no, and Molde as well, a trip to Norway as well. Yeah, it's a massive shame. This would have been some really good away trips. Yeah. Even you, Boyd, might have got off your seat to go to one of
my
these.
My fat ass to go to, 100% would have gone. No, I mean, Dermot would have been thrilled. We would
all over for Dundalk.
Can I just ask, what's happening with the season tickets? Because we got a load of emails saying that, got to get involved. You got to get into the, and I put every single thing to try and get in that ballot to go to the Sheffield United game. But now what's happening?
Same. They're ignoring it. Oh, go on, Josh. Josh's got.
Well, I have it on fairly good authority that just under half of us went into the ballot, which I'm surprised at. I thought it'd be way more, but apparently just under half entered the ballot. So this whole thing that it was going to be like, you know, how many games did they say? One in four? Did they estimate?
I think it was one in four.
It's going to be more like one in two. If this ballot does come into play, it's going to be more like, you know, one in two. So the club were really shocked, I understand, that that was as limited as it was. And they were also surprised at how many people applied as just a one, you know, because they did give people the option to go as a four. So that also brings the proposed capacity down, because the more ones you have, the less people they could fit in. So there's a bit of news on that. But, you know, the club are just doing what they can behind the scenes, along with other Premier League clubs, lobbying, you know, the Premier League lobbying the government as the Premier League to get fans back in the stadium. But it doesn't look like it.
But it does seem very frustrating when you look at Royal Albert Hall is going to have, you know, potentially, I think they're having like 50%, and it's a 3,000 seater. And yet they can't get anyone in Premier League grounds, like, and not just Premier League. You know, it just seems mad to me that if there's going to be more lockdowns, all the rest of it, it's probably a different podcast. But it just seems mad to me that they can't do some sort of COVID save, even if 10,000 can get into a 60,000 seater.
Yeah, it's mystifying. Absolutely.
It's a real. It's just gutting.
And, you know, no one is getting COVID. I said this last week. I think no one is getting COVID outdoors. And you know, first of all, it's all in small enclosed spaces in people's households. Yeah.
But the travel boys. The travel to get to the stadium is going to be.
I know.
Not everyone can go by private vehicle.
Well, I go on public transport as well, but I've been using. I've had to use the tube every now and then, you know, and you just deal with it, don't you? You kind of, you know. I mean, I you're right. It's the travel. It's the travel is an issue. I can see that. Even 10,000 fans.
Yeah, it's not a podcast about COVID or what's going to happen, but. Look, from reading most things you read, right, this is heading in a direction of more restrictions. And I don't think, how are you going to marry up telling people they can go to football, but then they've got to go, you know, they can't have another household coming to there.
Yeah.
Something like that seems to be coming. And yeah, it does feel like much as Arsenal now have just under half of all of us who have paid that deposit, you know, it will just sit there. But apparently what was also interesting was Bob, did you leave money in your account? Like, I don't know if you were owed anything back from the...
No, I took it back out.
So apparently 75% or so left it in, which I was shocked about. I took mine
definitely
out.
Definitely laziness. I don't think... I don't know what I've done. So, like...
I think, right. Like me. I think it's also our slightly, clearly our wealthy elitist fan base as well. That you know, has enough money. They could just leave it in there festering in Arsenal's bank account.
Yeah, exactly. With no interest whatsoever.
Yeah.
Maybe people felt that it was the right thing to do in the circumstance and they're going to use it at some point for the club. So
the whole preposterous thing. It was about 450 quid and I immediately took it out into my bank and I had to put exactly the same amount back in registering of the ballot. It was a preposterous situation, yeah. And it still remains. Before we go, I just want to mention the other big transfer day news, that Theo is going back to Southampton. Yeah, I'm pleased for him. You know, I feel like, you know, he's kind of been a sub, hasn't he? For Everton, obviously top of the league, having an amazing season. But it's nice that I feel like going back home to Southampton is a nice thing to do.
And I think as well, just looking at it from an Arsenal point of view, you know, we're often sort of, it's quite negatively spoken about how we don't sell players for enough money and other teams can always do that. But you look at like the Ox, Iwobi and Theo, and we got, you know, nearly 90 million for those three players. Like, it's good business, really, when you look at what they've gone on to do.
Yeah. Oh, Iwobi was good business, although he is now part of a title of the league squad. Yeah, go on, Josh.
I just have some breaking news of my own.
Oh.
It concerns Gunnosaurus and confirmation of the fee to attend the wedding. Do you want to have a guess?
Oh, no.
Well, you said 500.
Yeah, I was wrong. Apparently it was 250.
Oh, really?
250? That's not much.
But to clarify, not as a fee, as a donation. As a donation to the Arsenal Charitable Trust, the Arsenal Foundation. Okay.
He does it for free.
That's nice.
Important that I clarify that. So that's, you know, that's a bit of news there on Gunnosaurus. And I hope maybe he can just still do that, because I'm sure there's loads of Arsenal fans who, if and when we can ever have celebrations with other people again, would love him to be there and be doing a donation.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we could go on all night, but we should probably wrap it up, and we should probably all turn our attentions to Sky Sports News or Twitter more pertinently, quicker, to find out when Partey finally signs, hopefully. Luke, it's been brilliant. Let me ask you these questions. One, what's been your favourite song performance so far in Celebrity Karaoke Club on ITV2?
So far, Sex on Fire is my favourite. There's some very fun stuff coming, and it's a really, if you haven't seen it, it's on ITV2 on Wednesdays and Saturdays. It's always 10 till 11, and it's a really fun show, and you get to see a lot of celebrities, me in inverted commas, but in you know, getting drunk and singing songs, and it's a great show.
You have got a genuinely great voice, by the way.
Oh, I mean, thanks very much.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Oh,
And what is the best new impression that we've got to look forward to coming up in Spitting Image? Can you say?
I would say, do you know what? Like, and I'm not going to do it now because I haven't got the confidence to do it, but I've randomly got more confidence to do it for Spitting Image. But I play Brad Pitt. And I never thought I would end up playing Brad Pitt, but they were just like, yeah, can you do it? And I've done it in a few sketches and it's really good fun. And then there's another, I play Greta Thunberg's boyfriend in quite a few sketches. And that is a really funny character. So I'd say wait for those two.
Oh, okay. I'm excited about that. Yeah, I thought the Greta Thunberg one was funny, actually.
She's got some fun stuff coming.
That is a funny character.
They've done it in the right way with Greta. Like, people are so worried that they're going to get it completely wrong with, you know, she suffers from autism, she's a young girl, she's very positive, you know, doing a lot of positive work. Like, we're not going at her in the wrong way, I promise you.
No, cool.
She's a celebrity. No, she needs to be mentioned. You can't
just have like right wing Tories and Trump and all that.
Or criminals. You know, like, it's important. Like, it's important. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Luke. It's been a joy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Josh. Luke. And we'll be back sometime before the City game, hopefully. Yes. Bye.
Bye.
Wasn't that a great podcast? Now, if you've got 90 seconds spare in your day, come and listen to ours. It's called What Has He Said Now? And is available wherever you got this podcast.
You're going to lose a number of people to the flu.
This is a Playback Media production. To listen to all our football podcasts, visit playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.